Welcome back to The Roundtable. I'm Ian Pickus. If you're a sports fan, or more to the point, one who watches sports on TV, you may not recognize the name Rob King in the long roster of ESPN talent, but he has more to do with what we see and how we see it than just about anyone else.
Hi, welcome inside SportsCenter with Lindsay Zarniak. I'm Robert Flores. The Carolina Panthers, on the heels of their win just moments ago over the Arizona Cardinals, they will either get the Green Bay Packers or the Seattle Seahawks in the next round.
The senior vice president of SportsCenter and ESPN's news gathering operations since the beginning of 2014, King has been with the worldwide leader for more than a decade, following a long and distinguished career in print. King will visit our region on Thursday when he delivers a talk called The Content of Our Character, How Storytellers Color Stories, as part of Union College's Presidential Forum on Diversity series. The lecture is free and open to the public on Union's Schenectady campus, and it's my pleasure to welcome Rob King to the roundtable. Thanks for being here.
It's my pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Tell us what you have planned for the talk.
Well, the talk is a talk that I've been giving for a number of years in a number of places, designed really to introduce to folks that, particularly as we tell stories, we should always be mindful of the images and the memories and the things we've learned over our lives that end up coloring the way in which we tell stories. And I do it largely just through showing images of athletes and coaches and people we've seen in the news to get people to thinking about how they feel about the images they see, why they feel that way, and how quickly those feelings can change. And just to give a small example, you know, when you show an image of Lance Armstrong, and you ask the room, what do you think about him? And why do you think that about him now? And how did you think about him 6 years ago? And how many people do you see walking around with yellow bracelets? You know, folks suddenly realize that their perceptions change dramatically based on what they've believed, what they've read, what they've heard, and how they feel about specific issues. So, for example, if you're a cancer survivor, you still have a feeling about Lance Armstrong that's very different than maybe somebody who just cared about him as an athlete. So it's really a talk about understanding the power of these images and the real power of our own core beliefs in how we perceive these images.
When did you start to be aware of that relationship in your career in journalism?
I think it's always been part of a conversation for me and my family, you know, as an African-American. Experiencing Hank Aaron breaking the home run record was a very different moment in time than maybe it was for some of my best friends in elementary school. So I've always known that there are these parallel narratives that become parallel narratives based on how we actually perceive them. But I started really understanding what I wanted to say when I gave talks like this, really when Tiger Woods won the U.S. Open in 2005. As part of my talk, I often ask people to name the golfer of Asian descent who has made more money than anyone else. And routinely people are stumped because they don't think of Tiger Woods. And the reason I came to think of this question was he won the U.S. Open in 2005, and I actually got excited because Tiger won, and you know, there was this whole opportunity for African-American people to enjoy golf, and I was enjoying golf, and I went out to the driving range at night, that night. It was kind of a lit range. I was hitting balls, and I looked down the range, and there are these five Asian kids all wearing Nike clothing hitting golf balls. And it hit me like a punch. Like, oh my goodness, he's as much theirs as he is mine. And I started to ask myself, well, why is it that it took me so long to see that? And largely it was because of how we as a country that's had our very unique experience with race, have seen Tiger and seen his father and haven't seen his mother. And I think, again, that's just an example of us being self-aware. And so this is something that I've enjoyed sharing with people over time. The images change because the news and storylines change constantly. So hopefully for the folks that are there, it'll feel relevant and personal and like something they can use going down the line.
How does that translate to your work at SportsCenter itself? Because clearly, you know, race never goes away as an issue in sports, and it's something that crops up in some good ways and some not pretty ways. The power of the image and so on when we're dealing with sports, how does that come into play with what we as consumers of ESPN end up seeing?
Well, I think for many years, folks at ESPN have been very mindful of of the role that we play and how people enjoy sports and how people discuss sports. So we have, for many years now, spent a lot of time trying to make sure that the people who work here and the people who sit in meetings and the people who cut highlights and the people who are on the set and the people who are behind the scenes are diverse and have the ability and permission to talk about these issues and think about what we're doing as we present storylines, to be able to identify times where we need to expand the room to understand maybe a little bit more, to do a very serious and concerted bit of work to talk about times when we may not have done our best work to try to be better the next time. This is a company that has a good number of employee resource groups that are collections of employees around dimensions of diversity, like, you know, being younger or being of color or being in the LGBT community. And those employee resource groups aren't just, you know, social groups. They're actually teams of people who also give guidance as we tell stories, give guidance as we figure out terminology to use when we're trying to tell stories, give guidance in terms of identifying people that we should bring onto our shows or people we should have in our featured pieces so that we represent a whole host of points of view. We take that responsibility very, very seriously because sports happens in the live window, you know, and these things call for excellence even though they're happening like live, right? So you have to be as good as possible in the moment. That's a tall order, and the only way to do it is to make sure that you've got a great team of people working together thinking about this.
Speaking of things happening in the moment, you know, in the sports world, you guys are on all the time. And now that there's the LA Sports Center, that's even added an extra kind of level to that. I was hoping you could tell us a bit about what your average day is like and how the cycle goes in terms of, you know, coverage start to finish.
Well, my average day is a little unusual. My wife and I have three kids under the age of 11. And so I start off my day somewhere between 5:30 and 6:30 in the morning, waking everybody up and getting them dressed and getting them breakfast and getting them ready to head out to the bus. And so I don't really sit there and watch our broadcast from about, you know, 6 in the morning to about 9 in the morning. I'm sort of just being dad and trying to get my act together. But what I am doing, like so many of our audience in that time, is relying very heavily on what I get from our mobile products, you know, alerts, what I'm getting from our apps, what I'm getting from emails that I'm getting. So I'm very connected at all times. Once I get into the office, you know, we're live. We're live at 9 o'clock, and we're live all day, right through the Los Angeles show, where they actually come on at 1 o'clock Eastern time in the morning. And they do about 2 hours of live TV that we then begin to re-air from about 3 in the morning till 9 o'clock in the morning. We have an amazing array of talent in front of the camera and behind the camera, so I don't feel as though I have to, you know, sit there watching every second to make sure something bad isn't going on. People are just great, and they're creative, and they've got a ton of energy. The other thing I would tell you is that, unlike other news entities, sports happens on a calendar, right? So a lot of things are on a schedule. So we have the ability to plan our coverage 4 weeks out. And we know when it'll be great to have certain analysts in-house. We know when it'll be important to have great feature pieces in the cans that can amplify certain stories. So, for example, when Alex Rodriguez returned to spring training with the Yankees, we had 3 or 4 features on Alex Rodriguez pre-cut and ready to go. So the day he showed up, we had content built. And, you know, that's harder when you're in the general news business. You generally only know about elections and hurricane season. You can't really predict much else. We can get out in front of it a little bit. So I try to live about 2 to 3 months in the future and let the folks that I work with focus on more immediate stuff. And so when I watch, I get to kind of enjoy the fruits of a lot of planning.
Let me ask you about one of those features specifically. We had a local kid here, Peter Hooley, who plays for the University at Albany basketball team, come up with an all-time March moment, hit a three-pointer to send his team to the NCAA tournament. And next thing you know, he's spending a couple of days on campus on ESPN, which certainly, as you were just talking about, all the planning that goes into knowing the calendar, that was something that really came out of nowhere. People here in the Capital Region were maybe familiar with Hooley's story, but it went national just a couple hours after the big shot.
Yeah, that's the really cool thing about planning. And when you have enough stuff in the can, it really frees producers and directors to be watching in real time and saying, wow, that's magical. That was a magical moment. And the really great thing about our team is that we're always trying to find that thing we didn't plan for and find space for it. And it was so cool that he could be here, that he could be here to tell the story, that we could wrap, you know, bring the story to the broader national audience. It was cool that, you know, the university was tweeting about it, and we could amplify those tweets with the SportsCenter handle, and he was tweeting about it. We love that stuff. And I'll tell you what, you know, there are events like the Super Bowl or events like the tournament where stars come out of nowhere. I mean, we did a This Is SportsCenter commercial around the shark that was dancing to the left of Katy Perry. Mm-hmm. Just because everybody was talking about that. And I'm personally competitive. You know, I'm envious that Jimmy Fallon beat us to the Villanova piccolo player who couldn't play the school's anthem without crying, you know, and suddenly she's on Jimmy Fallon playing with the Roots. And I wish we'd gotten to her first. But I think that's the magic that happens with sports. You think you know what's going to happen. You plan for what's going to happen. You have a favorite and an underdog. You have this amazing opportunity for people who are in the audience or people who are watching in the social space to become part of the story. So if you've got the basic plan, you can react to whatever pops up. And that's where we are really blessed in terms of the people we have working here. People we have working here are sports fans, and they are watching everything, and they are ready to react to anything. And routinely, they're trying to surprise and delight the audience by showing, look, we're as big fans as you are. We saw that moment. Guy makes a shot. We find out about his mom. We hear from his sister all the way in Australia. That has to be shared by everybody. And it was really cool to see him up here. And he had a great time. So it was cool all around.
I want to go back to something you were talking about a little earlier, which is, you know, entering the sports day through the digital side of things more than the TV broadcast early. You came from the digital side at ESPN. I have to say, as a consumer of sports, I'm glad to have the Watch ESPN app on my phone. It's made for really a golden era of being a sports fan in some ways. But I wonder how the melding of the two kind of influences your job now.
Well, first things first, like I said, I got three kids, you know, under the age of 11, and my wife's a big tennis fan. I don't ever get the good TV until everybody's asleep. So Watch ESPN saved my life. I would tell you that the experience that I had in digital and print media working with a host of folks who were thinking about this at all time just said that the evolving fan starts with the best available screen. He or she does not care about what they're reaching for, so long as it's handy and so long as it's delivering the content they expect. What that has actually done for SportsCenter and what that's done for a lot of our on-air shows is galvanize us to make sure that we're cutting highlights and cutting content and making sure it's available across all of our platforms so that our shows are meeting the needs of our audience regardless of whether they can actually sit there and watch. We also know that when we're doing a show, producing a show means being mindful of what's happening in the world. And what's happening in the world happens sometimes on a handheld device. Somebody we care about, like LeBron James, tweets or posts on Instagram. And we owe it to our audience to be sharing that space with them. We owe it to our audience to be producing content that's specific to those platforms so that the relationship with SportsCenter remains authentic regardless of what platform they're on. And we owe it to them to produce shows that are mindful of when stuff happened, where we first learned about it, who created it, and, you know, how that brings us all together, which is why some of the coolest stuff we've done lately hasn't necessarily started with an idea that was in SportsCenter. It it's like, you know, two llamas break loose and we do a highlight with Herm Edwards grading the llamas on their performance out there on the street. That's just paying attention to where our fans are. And SportsCenter began with this notion that fans wanted a place where they could just hear about sports, be immersed, know that something happened around the world, and be connected with one another. So that's been our mission regardless of what technology's allowed. But technology and fan behavior have made us think about the show we're doing and make sure that and have as made us work to make sure that as we produce the show, we're producing it with this kind of global usage in mind. And I think it's actually made us even better fans because it forces us to be where our fans are.
You know, as long as ESPN's existed, it's been getting diagnosed with, you know, outside opinions about what's wrong with it or what could be better. I wonder what you think are some of the biggest misconceptions about ESPN and what you guys do.
Well, I don't know that I'd go to misconceptions. I think that the truth about sports fans is that they communicate in only one of two ways. They either cheer or they boo. So if you're not comfortable with the notion that there's criticism or celebration of what you do, you're really not ready to be in the business of sports. I do think that when people see our folks who are actually producing the show, when they see our talent out there in the world, when we go on the road, when they interact with our folks in the social space, they get this sense that this isn't a big monolith with a unified point of view. This is a place of diverse opinion and talent and fresh outlook and experience that they can engage with on a much more personal level, which is cool and true and important. And I'm really happy to see that evolution take place because we do have some amazing folks here. Our fans deserve to know that about them, and they should also understand that we're as big of fans of sports as they are. So, you know, you see over the last couple of years, you're seeing our anchors even embrace their fandom more publicly so that fans can get a sense that that's who we are, not this big, gigantic brand that is, you know, projecting out a point of view around the world of sports. This is a multicultural, multi-platform, diverse, fun, human place. And I think people are getting a sense of that over time.
Do you think that ESPN and SportsCenter should be representative of the culture's interest, which is to say, you know, if 60% of Americans think the NFL is their favorite sport to watch, that ESPN should focus on the NFL the most?
It's hard to say because I think that we do know what fans watch. We do know where fans spend their time on our digital platforms. And we do use that as a guideline to make sure that we are serving our audience in the way in which they are telling us they want to be served. By the same token, though, you know, when Peter Hooley shows up here, that's not necessarily something that everybody was crying out for. You don't get a lot of emails saying, I'm just not getting a lot of University of Albany basketball.
Maybe from this neighborhood, but that's about it.
Yeah, well, I don't. And I guess my point here is, when you find those surprises, or when you find the stories that our features group tell in our SportsCenter featured stories, or E60 stories, or Outside the Line stories, stories that not everybody knows, stories that can surprise folks, it's important to deliver that too. I mean, you think about the huge success of 30 for 30 as a brand at ESPN. That's not necessarily built on something people were clamoring for. That's built on ingenuity and surprise and the desire to engage people in new stories. So we have to strike the right balance. But listen, I would be lying to you if I told you that we didn't, you know for a fact which matchups drive the greatest ratings and which sports drive the greatest energy and, you know, how much passion there is around the NFL and NBA draft. We know these things and they become tent poles of what it is we do. But we're tireless in trying to also find ways to surprise people because otherwise it would just become a very predictable hum of content. And, you know, predictability isn't always what you're looking for. It's connection. It's that balance between, you know, the utility of getting what you want and the wonder of just being surprised, you know, and sports fans wake up every day wondering who's going to win. Why did that play happen? You know, when's the last time something like this happened? And that's finding that balance between utility and wonder is the key.
Well, Rob King will be in our region on Thursday when he delivers a talk called The Content of Our Character, How Storytellers Color Stories. It's part of Union College's Presidential Forum on Diversity series. The lecture will be held on Union's Schenectady campus. And Rob King is the Senior Vice President of SportsCenter and ESPN News for ESPN. Rob, safe travels, and we're very excited to have you in the region.
I'm really looking forward to it. Thank you.
And you're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.